Live from Beyond the Beltway, this is Bruce Dumont with our weekly analysis of national politics, facing occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Brett Hamachak of Human Events and author of Dissidently Speaking, Change the Words, Change the War. Eric Cohn, libertarian and marketing expert for the Acton Institute. He joins us from his home in Michigan. And also Paul Vallis, who's a Democrat and also a longtime educator here in Chicago and also in jurisdictions all over the United States. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base. That's the AM 560 studios. That's Elk Grove Village, Illinois. And that's the Salem radio station in the city of Chicago. Lots of topics this evening. As you will recall, if you're a regular listener, at the end of last week's broadcast, I was saying there was some disagreement, but I said I did believe that Joe Biden was going to debate. There was no question in my mind. And again, he surprised a lot of the political world this past week by basically jumping out there and agreeing to two debates and said, make my day, pal. And very bravado in his way with a lot of Joe Biden swagger. And he is going to be obviously ready. Donald Trump immediately responded to them with a positive response. June 27th, CNN is going to host the debate. And on September 10th, ABC is going to host the debate. And Donald Trump now wants to try to get Telemundo into maybe another debate with NBC. But again, that does not look like it's going anyway. And then again, I would say 24 hours later, a surprise again, when the Biden administration said, yes, we're going to confirm Kamala Harris for a vice presidential debate, even though Trump has not picked one. So I would say insofar as the debate story is concerned, President Biden is sort of leading the way and deciding a lot of the ground rules by forcing Donald Trump to respond. I want to get reaction from our guests, and we're going to start with Eric Cohn. Eric Cohn joins us. He's a libertarian. He's with the Acton Institute. He is in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And what's your reaction to the debate over debate? And were you surprised that President Biden was as aggressive as he was this past week?
I'm a little surprised that it seems like it's actually going to happen. Unlike you, Bruce, I don't have the same clairvoyance where I was seeing that this was something that was going to happen. So I'm a little surprised that it actually is transpiring, but it's all going to be very interesting to see what happens in the weeks between now and then. I think we probably get at least one guaranteed Trump teasing that he's not going to show up for some reason or the other in order to add some drama to all of this. I still think they're haggling a little bit over the conditions, audience and things like that, although I believe it should be no audience. And I think they agreed that the other person's mic will get cut off when the primary person is speaking. We should help avoid what the first debate between Trump and Biden in 2020, which was just absolutely unwatchable.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that we need to watch between now and then is what Republicans are going to do with this, because if they are going to do what they have typically been doing with Biden, which is lowering the bar for his performance in a debate like this so far down that basically as long as he doesn't fall over on his face and exit this plane of existence, they will have lowered the bar so far that he will seem like he won.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of the pregame leading up to the debates is going to be what we need to watch for.
Yeah, they've also spent basically a whole year. And, you know, Fox News is really a cheerleader in chief when it comes to lowering the expectations for Joe Biden. Democrat Paul Vallis joins us this evening. He ran for mayor of the city of Chicago a year ago. He's also a leading educator. Paul, what's your reaction to this debate situation involving Joe Biden? Did he kind of steal the show here?
Yeah, I think so. I think he got way out ahead of it. And it really allowed him to kind of lay out the terms, so to speak. So Trump is kind of responding to the terms that he laid out, not only in terms of the selection of obviously the stations who are going to host the debate, but also the individuals who are going to
moderate
the debate. So well, first of all, he had to do it because I think it would have been a killer for him not to do it.
And, I mean, when you say any place, any time, it doesn't give you much maneuverability.
But you know what it is? It's not like any place, any time. He's kind of dictating the time, dictating the place, and even dictating the moderates. So I think, or the moderators. So I think they got way out ahead of Trump, and now he's kind of responding. Mm-hmm. But I never thought that there was. He has to debate. He absolutely has to debate.
Brent Habachek is the closest thing to a conservative or Republican we have here this evening, although he kind of backs away from that label. But you've been covering politics for a long time. You're with Human Events. Were you surprised at what the Biden administration or campaign did this past week?
I'll admit I was actually very surprised. And I was very surprised because for a very long time, for a year and a half now, I've been saying a few things. Number one, I did not believe for a moment that Joe Biden will actually be the person on the ballot in November. I believe
you still believe that?
I believe for a very long time that he would withdraw at the convention because he's simply no longer mentally capable to be president.
In your opinion?
In my opinion and the opinion of lots of other people. I think anybody who's been around someone who's experienced these sorts of cognitive issues can see it. It's pretty.
But
clear.
how do you respond to those that say, but Brent, look at the State of the Union address. He was pretty sharp.
Now, again,
the allegations that he might be on something is total BS. We don't know that as a fact. But the point is, he was up for his game. People can get up for their game.
Right. He was my mother maybe in about 2008 before she passed in 2012 from Alzheimer's. He can have moments. Drugs do make a difference, by the way. So it's not total BS that he might have been on drugs. It's an allegation we don't know. Here's what I do know, and I'm certain of this, that he's not going to do well in this debate. He won't do well. Trump is going to stand across the stage from him, even with his microphone off, and he is going to poke him and he's going to prod him. And at some point in time, this man, whose mind no longer works the way it ought to, is going to fall apart. That, to me, is not a question. What is a question is, what will the media do to cover it? I believe the reason Joe Biden is debating is very different than what other people believe. I believe the reason he's debating is that the Democratic leadership wants him to debate because it's not going to go well, and it will give them the air cover they need to remove him as a candidate.
Eric, do you believe any of that? What Brent has said, any of it?
Oh, it's some very good palace intrigue. I don't know how much stock to put into it, but it's certainly a good narrative, and I think we're going to have to see. I don't think it's a guarantee that Trump is going to come out as the winner on this. 4 years ago, people thought that was going to be the result of the first debate, and I don't think you can say Trump came out of that a clear winner. In fact, the "Oh, will you shut up, man," was probably the best line that Biden delivered.
Right.
So I don't think any of this is a guarantee. It has been 4 years since these men have been on a debate stage. There's a whole lot to be seen here, and I don't think we can say with any kind of certainty who is going to be the best performer on that debate stage, given everything happening with these two men.
Yeah, the news media sort of looks down on that moment as sort of a low moment for Joe Biden at that point when he said shut up. But you know what? I think there's maybe half of America would love to be able to say shut up to Donald Trump. And again, I wouldn't put it past the president to do it again. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly talking debate and a lot of other stuff. Join us tonight.
I'll be here to hear what's on your mind.
Kids want to share what's going on in their lives with the adults around them. Parents, grandparents, teachers, coaches, and more. They want to know you're listening, and they want to listen to you. They want your input and guidance, early and often, on all kinds of topics. When it comes to a serious subject like underage drinking, they want to know your expectations, as well as how and why, as a young person, they should avoid alcohol. How you talk about it will change as your child grows. But the important thing is to talk about it. Not just once for an hour when you think the time is right, but in 60 one-minute conversations and more that are part of your everyday talks. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
When you need me, I'll be by your side.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nia Hergaris with today's tip for kids from the American Academy of Pediatrics. As parents, we want our children to grow up healthy and strong. That means helping teens take responsibility for their health as they become young adults. One way to do that is to make sure they have one-on-one time with their pediatrician. That helps them become comfortable talking about any health issue with their doctors and with you. So make sure to give your teen a voice. It's good for their health. For more on teen health, visit healthychildren.org.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back, and Paul Vallis, you wanted to make a point about the debate or the State of the Union.
I might be one of the few people out there who actually think Biden was not impressive in the State of the State. I think they had the State of the Nation. They had lowered the bar so significantly. Now, of course, there was that much celebrated response to Green, but I'm sure they saw that coming. I mean, you know, Green like telegraphs her punches like, you know, Iran telegraphed the shooting, you know, this the attack in Israel with the drones of which they knocked practically all of them out of the sky. So they were well prepared for that. But I was not impressed. And I think he is going to struggle. But, you know, there's two debates. It's really under the control conditions. He's got the stations and the moderators he wants. And they have this like mic cutoff. So I think if things get out of hand, not that there's collusion, but I think, you know, Trump's not going to double down and triple down and do what he does, which could fluster him.
My question is that something that the public wants? I mean, I think because we have this debate on this program periodically. I will get all kinds of comments because we frequently have guests and they get very excited and they talk over each other. And you know what? It's not good radio. I mean, you know, if you're sitting at home, maybe you kind of like it. Maybe it plays well when, you know, for the television version of the show. But I don't think it plays well on radio. But on the other hand, when you've got two guys mano a mano, you know, 15 feet apart, and they're going at it, I don't think I want the microphones to be turned off. I think with Biden, he's older, he's cantankerous, he's Irish, and I mean that in a positive way. I don't think he's going to take any crap from Donald Trump.
Well,
I think half of America wants Joe Biden to tell Donald Trump to shut up.
Well, and half of America wants Donald Trump to tell Joe Biden the same thing.
Well, yes. Okay. So we'll see what happens. But I'm just saying is that, you're the president of the United States. You have an opportunity to demonstrate. I mean, he thinks he can get up for it. I mean, we've all seen him fall down. We've all seen the malapropisms. I mean, we all, you know, Fox News could do a whole, you know, 5-hour documentary on all the mistakes of Joe Biden. And I'm not here to say that none of them took place because they did. But again, you're going to have a lot more people watching. And I don't think we should undersell or undercount the president. Eric, you had a further comment?
Oh, I was just going to say, I think it's more like somewhere around 20% of the country wants Trump to tell Biden to shut up.
Yeah.
Another 20% wants Biden to tell Trump to shut up. And the remainder wants them both to shut up.
Well, I agree with that. But I just want to make a comment. I think the expectations are so low. First of all, he had to respond to the debate and get out ahead of the Republicans. And I think they're kind of responding to the conditions he's laid out. So they've really kind of been outmaneuvered. And look, it was like the state of the state. State of the nation. You said it at the beginning, you know, there's this perception here that Biden did extraordinarily well. Well, I thought he was not impressive at all. I think he kind of stumbled through it.
You've made that point. Now, the other thing is we should put this in context with the polls, because everybody is watching the polls. I think we're more poll focused in this campaign than any campaign I can remember. But it's also the longest campaign we've ever had for president, and I hope we never have one of those again. But again, they are looking at the polls, and the recent polls, including from the New York Times and Siena College, and again this past week, this is the voter preference among registered voters. And these are numbers that have to be, you know, shattering to the people at the White House. In Nevada, Trump is ahead 50% to 38%. In Michigan, he's ahead 49% to 42%. In Arizona, it's Trump 49%, Biden 42%. In Pennsylvania, it's Trump 47, Biden 44. That's certainly within the margin of error. But in Wisconsin, it is Biden who's ahead over Trump 47-45, again, within the margin of error. And since we have someone who lives in Michigan as a guest on our program this evening, I want to go to you, Eric, and just talk about amongst your friends and neighbors and the people that you run into in the course of your daily life, is there much talk about this election? Is there a lot of pro-Trump sentiment? Is there anti-Biden sentiment? What are you picking up as you, with your eyes and ears as you travel the streets of Michigan?
In Grand Rapids, not a whole lot of focus on it yet. You know, I think like most people around the country who don't follow this stuff religiously like we do, their attention will turn there a little later in the year. Which is why I do think that it's fairly interesting that we're going to have a debate seemingly well before both conventions, mm-hmm. well before the expectation is that people are really paying attention to this, which I actually think does feed into that theory that it gives the Democrats an opportunity for some kind of a brokered convention if they think that this goes poorly. And
Do you also think that it's maybe the reason why the Biden administration has decided to move quickly and get a mm-hmm. debate out there just because they want to stop the hemorrhaging in some of these battleground state polls?
Yeah, I think the problem with that theory is that it overstates the value of these debates. I mean, I just don't know how many people are actually mm-hmm. persuaded by these things one way or another. You have a lot of people locked in, not because of their affinity towards either of these candidates, but because of their dislike of the other candidate and the other political parties. So I don't know how much the debate is going to change the trajectory of it in any of these individual states. I think going back to, again, Brett's theory from earlier is if Biden performs so poorly that the polls continue to look like the ones that you just showed, there's an opportunity to try to squeeze him out at a convention. You know, it would be possibly catastrophic for them. Who knows how that's going to go? Plus factor in the potential violence you're going to have outside of the convention in Chicago when the Democrats have it later this year. I mean, there's a possibility that this can go very, very sideways for them, but it does create some intrigue around this in a way that I don't think we've seen. People are just kind of, I think, a little mm-hmm. bored is the wrong word, but exhausted with the rematch between the two of them.
We should also mention whether people are really tuned in or not. I mean, it's likely that there's going to be upwards of 70 million people watching this debate. Maybe it's off, you know, 10 million, whatever it is. You're going to have a lot of people watching this because of the buildup.
But how many persuadable people is a huge
maybe
question.
Maybe not. That's true. But again, you know, as I've said for 40 years on this program, when you look at a presidential campaign, each party starts with about 45% of the vote. It's pretty much baked in. So when you're talking about where elections are won or lost, it's about 10% of the population. So if you could get 5.1% of that 10%, that's how you become a president of the United States. And that's why this election is likely to be decided by maybe less than 150,000 people in five or six states. Paul Vallis, do you want to comment?
You know, I just want to make the comment, and I think I'm kind of paraphrasing what's already been said. I think they're having the debate now and early because Biden will be more diminished two or three months down the road. So I think the objective here is to have the debate, get it out of the way, because the expectation was he was not going to have the debate. And then secondly,
diminished because of health reasons?
You know, I just think the more you see him and the more you hear him, the more diminished he seems to be. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's like, let's get this out of the way. Secondly,
this is our Democrat talking.
So, look, I've been on the stage with Biden for years. He visited New Orleans, you know, with the Obama administration during the rebuilding of New Orleans. So the bottom line is clearly he is significantly diminished. And I'm not saying that to be offensive or anything like that. But I believe that they want to have the debate early. And I think the second reason they want to have it early is to give them time to recover in the event that they have to make a change. So
they've also got both. They have conventions within a month as well. Brent, do you have a further comment?
Yeah, look, I stick with my point. So I said a year and a half ago that Donald Trump would not be able to be elected president unless the Democrats were crazy enough to let Joe Biden run again. I will stand with that. So I think that if Joe Biden is on the ticket in November, Trump will likely beat him. And
give us the scenario, if you will, because you believe this for a long time.
Yes.
So I'm sure you've given it some thought. What does the Democratic power base, or what does power structure, what do they say in explaining why Joe Biden is not renominated? Tell us the narrative that you see.
I can give it to you easily. And, of course, none of us here are inside the Democratic Party star chamber, but here's what I think reasonable people would do. They would say, look, first of all, he had to run for reelection because he would have been a lame duck a year ago. So he had to run.
Okay.
And once he ran, it made sense to make it so that he would get the nomination. Strong president, the whole bit. But the play, the staged, wonderful play would be to have him step up at the convention, say, thank you so much for your nomination, but for a variety of reasons, then I am going to step aside. Thank you so much. It was great to serve. And then they would have an opportunity to pick a clean candidate, no battle scars, no baggage, and 3 months to market and sell them to the American people. And that would play brilliantly. There's theater to it. And the American people nowadays love theater. And the Democratic Party is extraordinarily good at marketing.
Quick question.
Yes.
If he were to do that,
yes.
Again, the same people, they've got to give the same answer to the American people. How do you say to them, if the president is stepping aside, why don't we move the vice president into the presidential spot, and how do we say no to Kamala Harris? That's my question. I'm going to give you 3 minutes to think about your answer. I'm sure you have one.
I do.
But again, because I think that's another issue that you're going to have to deal with, because if for some reason he slips or goes away, I mean, a lot of people are going to say, it's her turn. And I want to hear your response when we come back. I'm Bruce Dumont. Don't go away. This is Beyond the Beltway. Nice to have you with us this evening.
This is Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com for Town Hall. A law professor waved an American flag at a City University of New York protest and got threats in response. Jeffrey Lacks counter-protested this week at a pro-Palestinian demonstration on campus organized by the Muslim Student Association. They called the flag a fascist symbol and pledged to target Lacks in future protests as well as other Zionist staff. These people hate America, Lacks said. They want America destroyed. Immediately after this incident, CUNY cited security concerns as they canceled two Hillel events on its campuses, celebrating Israel's Memorial Day and then their Independence Day. In other words, CUNY caved to the radical mobs that want an end to America rather than stand up for those who wish to uphold our ideals in free speech and religious tolerance. If you didn't hear about this, it's because not a single American media outlet covered it. Not even the media in New York reported on the cancellation of two Jewish events as radical activists target campuses and the American ideal.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid
knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Matthew.
Huh? Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey. Want a drink?
No, thanks. I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect, so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Let's be honest. The National Symphony may not be in his future, but he wanted to try violin. So you said yes because you love him. And if you love him that much, love him enough to make sure he's buckled up and in the back seat. Find out more about keeping your kids safe in your vehicle at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Show him you love him. Keep him safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont, we are back, and it's our portion of this program where we let each guest introduce themselves with a brief biography. And, Paul, we're going to begin with you because you probably have one of the longest. So give us the medium version.
That's because I'm getting old.
Well, you've been around a long time. You've had a lot of distinguished positions. You ran for mayor of Chicago.
Grandson of Greek-American immigrants, five veterans, four first responders, three teachers. Yeah. So we're, and small business owners.
Yeah.
So we're, we're kind of that three-generation family, both public service and small business. A lifelong Democrat came to work for during the great years of, if you remember, Senator Phil Rock, and, of course, later on the Senate president, and then working in the Daley administration, as budget director.
You were very close to Richard M. Daley.
That's right. And of course, working with Kathy, if you remember.
Right, okay. And Brent, go ahead, have a check.
Well, first of all, I'll give a shout-out to Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, my hometown, just for fun. I think I got some friends listening.
Okay, hopefully they will call in.
Hopefully they will. Vice President and Associate Publisher for Human Events Media Group. We have Human Events in the Post-Millennial under our flag. Also a board member for Bridge Charities, where we have programs that are designed to work with young people to teach them how to engage constructively and think critically and solve problems instead of debating issues.
In the history of conservative politics in America, Human Events was in the forefront as a publication, a print publication. Where is it now? Is it still a print publication? And how would you assess its influence now compared to its illustrious history?
Well, first of all, it's digital only. Everything's digital only. Paper loses money. Sadly, I miss grabbing things out of my mailbox. But, I had a chance a couple of years ago to sit down with Tom Winter and Alan Riskin, who were with Human Events in the early days and eventually became the owners. And they said they were dedicated. They were all about fighting and winning the Cold War. And, of course, the Cold War is over. And I think our platforms today are, you could summarize by saying, perhaps the war they're fighting is for American sovereignty and to maintain America as a great and singular sovereign nation, as opposed to sort of slipping into the global abyss. Okay. How's that?
Eric Cohen, it's your turn. Tell us about yourself.
Well, for my day job, I'm the Director of Marketing and Communications at the Acton Institute for the Study of Religion and Liberty, based here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I am the producer of a documentary called The Hong Konger, Jimmy Lai's Extraordinary Struggle for Freedom, about the Hong Kong political dissident and newspaper publisher who is currently about 80 days into his trial in Hong Kong on national security law charges. Almost a certainty that he will end up convicted in that trial and likely imprisoned on the Chinese mainland. And for people who want to learn more about that documentary and check it out, you can watch it at freejimmylai.com. His last name is spelled L-A-I, freejimmylai.com.
Okay. We have been keeping you abreast of the candidacy of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And by the way, if there's the next another twist in the debate, obviously President Biden does not want Robert F. Kennedy Jr. in any debate. But again, if Robert Kennedy gets to a point where he's got 15% and he's on in enough states where he's got the ability to get the 270 electoral votes, there will be more pressure on that to happen. Donald Trump has been a little more evasive as to whether or not he wants Robert Kennedy in the race, because recent polls suggest that Robert Kennedy might be taking more votes away from Donald Trump than from Joe Biden, which is not the, at least that was not the political wisdom at the beginning of this campaign. And again, here are the states, by the way. The big news of this past week is that New Jersey has been added to the list of Kennedy ballot states. Last week we reported that California, Nevada, Idaho, Utah, Nebraska, Iowa, Texas, Hawaii, Michigan, North Carolina, New Hampshire, and this past week, New Jersey. So that map of the United States is starting to look a little more orange if you're listening to us on the or watching us on YouTube. And again, we'll see what happens, how far the Kennedy campaign goes forward. Speaking about trials, we've gone 37 minutes into this program, and we've not talked about the big trial that has many in America watching it, at least many media types. I don't know whether are there many people watching and talking about this Stormy Daniels, Donald Trump trial in Michigan, in your view, Eric?
No, I don't really think so. I think this is so much of this is baked into the cake, because while there may be some specific revelations that have happened in that courtroom that we did not know before, so much of the story we have known for years. So, and as you mentioned, there are people watching it. Well, nobody's watching it unless you're in the courtroom. There are no television cameras broadcasting this. It is only media reports relaying what has been happening in the courtroom. So I think the combination of the lack of television access and the fact that there's just not a whole lot that I think we're learning from the testimony, I just don't think it's on that many people's radar.
Well, for those people who are watching, and again, I think it's primarily the political junkies, but there may be a small percentage, I think, of independents who are keeping an eye on it. The explanation that is being provided by the news media, and I don't just mean Fox News, I mean Fox News kind of blurs the line a little bit, as you might expect. It's not been egregious in their coverage, but specifically CNN and to a lesser degree MSNBC, but CNN specifically, I think, has done a pretty good job of analyzing what's happening in the courtroom. And this past week, they all felt that Michael Cohen kind of slipped on a banana during his cross-examination, and in trying to explain a phone call that he received from a 14-year-old who was trying to, harass him. Again, you get into the explanation of that key point, which everyone on CNN thought was a key point, a negative point for Michael Cohen. You get into the explanation, and I have to tell you, my eyes glaze over, and I'm fascinated by the subject. So if someone as politically interested as I am is being blown away and his eyes are glazing over in the explanation, I mean, Joe and Mabel, average citizen who haven't watched this, I mean, I don't know where they're going with it, because I think the Republicans and Donald Trump's defense attorney, they've done a good job of just sort of obliterating the issue. Paul, do you have see it differently?
I just think
you're not watching this every day, are you?
No, I'm not, and it's there's no new revelations, and I don't think people who support Trump are going to be swayed. If anything, it's more martyrdom for him, because the more the media focuses on it and piles it on, I think it solidifies his core supporters, those who oppose him. I don't think it's going to swing people in any one direction. Plus, you know, there are so many characters involved in this who are unsavory on both sides. You know, it's like a soap opera. And you're right. You know, when I read about it in the news, let alone watch it, which I don't, or watch the coverage, it causes me to glaze over too.
Right. So if I could, here's what I think about this particular trial. First of all, it's interesting. People will always mention CNN or MSNBC. Somebody ought to mention ABC or NBC. If you check the news ratings, far more people watch network news than cable news. You should watch their coverage. It's interesting. Here's the way the Trump trial matters.
By the way,
in
this particular case, according to ABC, which is the network that I watch mostly, they sort of agreed with what CNN was saying, is that his testimony last week was confusing. It seemed to put him in a box. And again, tomorrow he's back on trial again, or on the stand again, and the cross examination will continue. But again, the general feeling, the analysis that I saw and watched, was that Donald Trump's defense attorney really got to Cohen last Friday, and may continue to pummel him tomorrow.
Here's why the trial matters. The trial matters only until we have an outcome. So from a Trump supporter standpoint, the trial is evidence, and evidence is a good word. It is evidence that we live in a country now that is using the legal system to politically persecute people. It is, straight up. So for Trump supporters, they're going to stay with him no matter what.
Right.
And for people that don't like him, they want him hung. And if the jury doesn't, they're going to say they made a mistake, but they're still going to hate him. Here's why it matters. Let's say that he's convicted. There are going to be a whole host of people out there who aren't obsessed with politics who are going to say, oh my goodness, God, he's been convicted of a crime. This just has to go away. And those people can very well have their votes influenced by this. On the other hand, if he's acquitted, which would be tough with the New York jury, if he's acquitted, that's a little tiny bit of a problem as well, because that could get people who are also not all that interested, who have been hearing that this seems to all be politically motivated. Perhaps they're going to stop and take a look and say, my goodness, I thought he was guilty of all these things. So I think it matters only for the verdict.
It puts the media, I think, really on the spotlight as well, because they have led this narrative that he's going to be convicted in this trial. Again, I've seen in the last week, I've seen with my own eyes and ears, at least CNN sort of is admitting that, you know, there may be a problem here. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say on this program, I think he beats it.
Well,
even with the New York jury, I think Donald Trump beats it. And we're going to come back and let everybody respond. Let Eric respond as well. We've also got callers on the line. We will bring them in to our conversation. I'm Bruce Dumont from coast to coast, border to border, around the world at Beyond the Beltway every Sunday night. This is Bruce Dumont.
This is Dennis Prager. Sign up today for an unforgettable experience in Israel this October. Mike Gallagher and I are traveling to the Holy Land on the Stand with Israel tour with our trusted partner, Inspiration Cruises and Tours. This trip of a lifetime to Israel is one you don't want to miss. Register today before it's too late at StandWithIsraelTour.com, StandWithIsraelTour.com, or call 855-565-5519, 855-565-5519.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid
knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Why was the basketball court all wet?
Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school?
Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
What if the music stopped? If the familiar voices were silenced? If there were no breaking news updates? What if your companion and connection to your community came with a monthly fee? Don't worry, we're free local radio with you wherever you go. Celebrating 100 years and looking forward to the next 100. We are broadcasters. Text radio to 52886 and let Congress know you depend on your local TV and radio stations. This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back on Beyond the Beltway, and Eric Cohn, did you want to make a comment on the further comment on the Stormy Daniels trial, or were the how the public is or the media are playing it?
Yeah, two things. One, I do want to make the point that the person who was under cross-examination this week was Michael Cohen. That is Cohen, not Cohn. No relation whatsoever between myself and the former Trump fixer. Didn't want any confusion about that out okay. there at all. But I think to Brent's point, I think it's unlikely that he achieves an acquittal. It is very possible that this ends in some kind of a hung jury mm-hmm. where you cannot get 12 people in favor of convicting, and that is the outcome. Mm-hmm. But I do think, as Brett said, there's a possibility when we're talking about an election decided in a few, 175,000 votes, I think it was,
That's
in a couple of
it.
States 4 years ago. How many people are going to possibly have their votes swayed either in terms of who they vote for or whether or not they show up on election day when they've heard for months and months, Donald Trump convicted felon, Donald Trump convicted felon, Donald Trump convicted felon? It really will test the possibility of just can anybody be dissuaded from the negative polarization that drives them to vote for one candidate or the other? So I think it'll be interesting in that sense, although it's not going to vindicate, I think, at least in my mind, the legal theory behind what Alvin Bragg is doing here. I think there's merit to the other cases being brought against Trump. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a lot of merit at all to this case. And in that sense, it's pretty tragic that this is the one that goes first and will be almost the only one that is likely ever to really get prosecuted.
But do you think also, are you optimistic or pessimistic that any of these other trials are even going to start this calendar year?
I don't think it's a matter of optimism or pessimism. I don't think any of them are going to start before the okay. election. I just think that's the it's flown. The possibility of that is just flown now.
And does this trial, I'm going to argue, I agree with you that insofar as the severity of the charges in the other cases seem to me to be far more important, especially the Jack Smith dossier and top secret information. However, because Donald Trump seems to have a problem with female voters, and that this is about, granted, it's about, you know, dotting the I's and crossing the T's, and how an accountant dealt with this money paid to Michael Cohen. I mean, to a lot of people, it is still about sex. It's still about Donald Trump cheating on his wife. I know that's not what the trial's about, but in the court of public opinion, it's Donald Trump cheating on his wife with a porn star, and that can't play well with women, I don't think. Does anybody disagree with that? So from a political standpoint, it could be the most dynamic of all the trials because it could move votes.
If what we learned in 2016 with the Access Hollywood tape and with the Stormy Daniels stuff from back then and with his all of his behavior towards women for years, if that didn't affect that election, I just have a really hard time believing. While I do agree with you, Bruce, I think there's two points we have to separate here. The underlying stuff that's the basis of this case, I think Donald Trump is absolutely guilty of. The having gone through Michael Cohen to pay off Stormy Daniels is indisputable to me. The legal theory that Alvin Bragg has advanced that these misdemeanors somehow become a felony because of it is a novel legal theory and one that I think is probably pretty weak at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. But again, in a Manhattan courtroom, it might be enough to get a conviction.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to go to calls. Robert is listening to us in Carmel, California. Robert, go ahead. You're on Beyond the Beltway.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. It was a question about Robert Kennedy.
Yes.
And getting on the ballots. How? I didn't vote for – I didn't see his name on the primary ballot anywhere. Who voted for him? Who's putting him on the ballot and how?
The Robert Kennedy presidential campaign has got to go to each of the 50 states, and they have got to deal with the local rules and regulations about getting candidates' signatures, petition signatures, and if you get a certain number of signatures, and it's very difficult for independents to get those signatures, if you get them, you end up on the ballot. If you don't get them, you don't end up on the ballot. So that's why I in my conversations with the Kennedy campaign at the local level, they don't want to provide guests to even talk about Robert Kennedy. The only thing that's important to them is they have to get petitions. They get people to sign petitions. He's not even on the ballot in Illinois, one of the reasons why he's not interested in being a guest on this program. So each week we're adding more states where he is at least eligible to get to 270. I don't think he's at 270 yet. But again, that's what he needs, because if he's not on in the ballot, there's no way in the world he can be elected president.
I'm in California. I voted. 1980 was the first election I ever voted in. I pay attention to the ballot, to the initiatives, any petitions.
Right.
I pay attention. I voted in every single election. I have not seen one petitioner. I've not seen one petition. I've not seen anything regarding with his name on it, and my state's saying okay.
Okay.
I don't
well,
get
you're,
it.
That's because unbeknownst to you. And you may be politically astute, but unbeknownst to you, there are people in California who've gone door to door to get Robert Kennedy's a name on a signature or this signature on his ballot, on his petitions, and that's why he is going to be on the ballot in California. So that's you may not like it, but he's going to be there, and you can obviously, I think, probably vote against him. You don't sound like someone who wants to vote for him. But again, that's the explanation. And again, all the debate moderators will also say that, or the debate organizers, they will say, you've got to be on ballots in enough states to be elected president. That certainly, I think, is a viable, reasonable request. And secondly, you have to show 15% public support in a variety of polls. And again, that hasn't happened yet for Robert Kennedy. On that note, we do have to pause in hour number one of our broadcast. We're going to be back with all of our guests. And since we've solved all the domestic political issues in hour number one, when we come back in hour number two, we're going to delve into foreign policy, U.S. relations with Israel, and also U.S. involvement in Ukraine. I'm Bruce Dumont. Don't go away. Another full hour coming up right here. We'll be right back.
This is Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com for Town Hall. A law professor waved an American flag at a City University of New York protest and got threats in response. Jeffrey Lacks counter-protested this week at a pro-Palestinian demonstration on campus organized by the Muslim Student Association. They called the flag a fascist symbol and pledged to target Lacks in future protests as well as other Zionist staff. These people hate America, Lacks said. They want America destroyed. Immediately after this incident, CUNY cited security concerns as they canceled two Hillel events on its campuses, celebrating Israel's Memorial Day and then their Independence Day. In other words, CUNY caved to the radical mobs that want an end to America rather than stand up for those who wish to uphold our ideals in free speech and religious tolerance. If you didn't hear about this, it's because not a single American media outlet covered it. Not even the media in New York reported on the cancellation of two Jewish events as radical activists target campuses and the American ideal.
TV news. It's a love-hate relationship. Well, let's be honest. More hate. We agree. That's why we're different. Salem News Channel has assembled the greatest collection of conservative minds all in one place. Home to Charlie Kirk, Hugh Hewitt, Eric Metaxas, and more. There's finally a place on TV for lovers of freedom like you. Watch anytime, on any screen, free, 24/7. Find what you're looking for at snc.tv. That's snc.tv.
As a local business owner, you get called every week by marketing companies. We get it. We have hundreds of satisfied customers. Here's what a satisfied client recently said.
Open enrollment is going great. We're hitting record numbers. Thank you so much for this report. It really is amazing to see how the marketing is really shaping our enrollment around the city.
If you're a local business and ready for the next step, visit SurroundChicago.com right now. Our experts are ready to help you take your marketing to the next level. Visit SurroundChicago.com today.
What if the music stopped? If the familiar voices were silenced? If there were no breaking news updates? What if your companion and connection to your community came with a monthly fee? Don't worry, we're free local radio with you wherever you go. Celebrating 100 years and looking forward to the next 100. We are broadcasters. Text radio to 52886 and let Congress know you depend on your local TV and radio stations. This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school? Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nia Hurd-Garris with today's tip for kids from the American Academy of Pediatrics. As parents, we want our children to grow up healthy and strong. That means helping teens take responsibility for their health as they become young adults. One way to do that is to make sure they have one-on-one time with their pediatrician. That helps them become comfortable talking about any health issue with their doctors and with you. So make sure to give your teen a voice. It's good for their health. For more on teen health, visit healthychildren.org.
This is Bruce Dumont from coast to coast and border to border from AM 560. That is The Answer in Chicago. That's the Salem station. And we are live coast to coast. And before we get into a discussion of foreign policy, which I promised before the break, during the break, a couple of our guests wanted to make some comments about Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is seeking the presidency as an independent. And we're going to let them take a moment. Brent, you specifically asked for some time.
Yeah, I'm going to make all sorts of enemies amongst my sort of political pals and say that if I lived in a state where my vote mattered, I live in Illinois, so I don't, but I wish I did, he would be the one of the three I would vote for. I think that, and it's not about agreeing with him on every policy. I don't. But I do believe him to be a reasonable man of integrity who would take measured looks at policy issues. And I do also believe that he would take real steps to try to address what's going on inside of the federal bureaucracy, something that didn't happen, by the way, during the Trump administration. And I believe, finally, that not having him on stage on a debate, everybody focuses on how he would be a problem for Joe Biden. He's a former Democrat and so on. I would like to point out, as somebody who's been very active in what's called the medical freedom movement, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. poses as big a threat to Donald Trump, or at least a big threat, as he does to Joe Biden, because there are a lot of people out there who are very upset, and rightfully so, about how Trump handled the pandemic. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been outspoken, on point, and consistent with regard to it, and it's a problem. So just as though we can be clear, Biden might not want him on a stage, I don't think Trump's in a big hurry to have him either.
I agree with you. I don't think he does. Eric Cohn, I think you've got an opposing view on Robert Kennedy. Do you not?
Well, I agree with the second point there about it's not entirely clear if Robert F. Kennedy would take more votes from Biden or if he would take more votes from Trump. I agree that I don't think that that is clear to all of us. In most cases, I don't think we're going to have an opportunity to find out because I don't think he's going to get on near enough ballots in enough states to get to the possibility of getting 270 to win. He won't get included in the debates. I disagree pretty vehemently with the first part. I think RFK Jr. is an irresponsible crank. I think he has demonstrated himself to be that consistently over the course of his public life. This is somebody who once called for people at the Competitive Enterprise Institute to be jailed because they disagreed with him on climate change and what was going to be necessary to fix it, at least in Robert Kennedy Jr.'s eyes. So I don't think he really adds a whole lot to the public conversation. I think he's getting by mainly on the fact that his name is Robert Kennedy and gets an undue amount of attention because of that. But there's nothing about his public life that tells me that this would be in any way markedly better than the two very poor options we already have on offer.
Okay. Yeah. Paul Vallis.
Once again, it's all about contrast. You know, I was asked when he came to town, and I believe it was whether it was Newsmax or News Nation, they held a town hall for him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so they asked me if I could invite people who I know in the city could come. And I did. I invited about 100 people, including a number of physicians like Dr. Tariq Butt, head of Chicago Medical Society. Mm-hmm. And it was
So did you like him?
It was a 90-minute debate. Let me tell you, he answered all the questions in a very substantive way, including the questions about COVID and his stance on COVID and things like that. The point that I want to make is that I don't think either of them want Robert Kennedy into the mix because he is a wild card. You know, there's this assumption here that he's going to hurt Biden, but I think he's a wild card for Trump. So at the end
recent,
of this,
the yeah. recent the recent polls just in the last couple of weeks suggested that he's going to take more from Trump. But again, now that could change, but that's preliminary discussion. But I want to go back to something you said, Brent. You said that if you lived in a state where your vote did count,
where it mattered, correct,
you would vote for Robert Kennedy. I'm going to ask you a different question.
Okay.
If you, because this is, there are some in the Kennedy campaign that think this way about what I'm about to say. If you lived in a state where you know your vote isn't going to count, would you vote for him because you might be part of a movement by the Kennedy campaign to try to get at least one state or a couple of states that will keep Joe Biden or Donald Trump from getting to 270 electoral votes? So you live in Illinois, you're a Republican, you don't think Donald Trump is going to win Illinois, and you vote for Robert Kennedy. Your thoughts?
Well,
just the opposite of what you said.
Right. It's sort of an interesting construct. Let me put it to you this way. I'm going to answer a slightly different question, but I'm going to answer your question.
Okay.
Robert F. Kennedy didn't stay as a Democrat because of the way the Democratic primaries he felt were rigged against him. I believe he was right in that assessment. I believe he was wrong to not run as a Democrat because if he had, he would have positioned himself very well to be that person to step in at the convention. That, of course, can't happen now. Would I use a vote for RFK Jr. potentially as some sort of a protest or counteracting vote? Me, personally, no, I wouldn't, because I'm not wired that way. I would vote for only someone I wanted to vote for. But your theory's not crazy. Would people do it? Certainly. I mean, we've seen all sorts of
Michigan. There was a representative of the Robert F. Kennedy campaign that floated that idea. And when that became public, they blew her out of the water because they said, "My, what is she talking about?" But she was presenting a very strong case that in a state where someone overwhelmingly is likely to win, if you're in the opposition party, what do you have to lose? Because if you're a Republican in New York, your vote is not likely to happen. It's not likely to mean much for Donald Trump. But if they threw New York or any probably state, a large state, took it off the Electoral College map, I mean...
But pause right where you are just for a moment. Think about the conversation we're having right now.
Right.
This is a conversation where what are we really talking about? That the American political landscape has become so absent from any sort of meaningful conversation, debate, anything, integrity of candidates, that we would play with our vote to manipulate the outcome somehow. If we've gone that far, and we have, I'd suggest our problems are much bigger than 2024.
Paul, do you agree?
Yes, I do.
Eric, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree that the popularity of someone irresponsible like Robert F. Kennedy does point to the problems with the two major parties and the candidates that they have put forward.
Okay.
But let me just say, when I say I agree with this idea that people are not necessarily going to – there are fewer people to do a protest vote. I think people are going to vote for the individual they want. But I'll tell you, if he gets on the ballot, I believe that as this campaign runs its course, Biden supporters are going to grow increasingly uncomfortable, particularly if he remains on the ticket. And I think, obviously, if Trump does get convicted – likewise, he'll suffer the same fate.
Yeah. I think both candidates will feel uncomfortable with Robert Kennedy on a debate stage because they don't want him there because they're fearful that they will lose votes to him. Back shortly from Chicago, I'm Bruce Dumont.
As a local business owner, you get called every week by marketing companies. We get it. We have hundreds of satisfied customers. Here's what a satisfied client recently said.
Open enrollment is going great. We're hitting record numbers. Thank you so much for this report. It really is amazing to see how the marketing is really shaping our enrollment around the city.
If you're a local business and ready for the next step, visit surroundchicago.com right now. Our experts are ready to help you take your marketing to the next level. Visit surroundchicago.com today.
In the new video series, Fault Lines, Professor Vodi Bauckham examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide. Available at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay?
isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
If you have been watching the Stormy Daniels Donald Trump trial, you will see at the end of each day's deliberations, when Donald Trump comes out and reads voluminous comments, very favorable reviews of him, he's using his airtime very well. It isn't always complaining about the trial, but he's using it to make political points. You will see in many cases standing behind him are several of the people who have been mentioned as a possible running mate for him. They're all there trying to kiss the rear end as much as they possibly can outside that courtroom. But one person who has not been there, and one person who at least a couple of weeks ago, the scuttle was that he might maybe have the inside track because of relations that the two of them have, is Marco Rubio of Florida. And so Marco Rubio has not been with the cheerleaders outside the courtroom. However, Marco Rubio did something far more courageous today. He went on Meet the Press with Christian Welker, and I think he demonstrated to Donald Trump and to the rest of the country that should he be a running mate with Donald Trump, he might be up for battles with the news media. And so here's a clip of today's interview with Christian Welker.
Well, let's talk about one of the major policy issues of this campaign, the issue of abortion. Senator, would you support a federal abortion ban?
Well, I'm pro-life. And to me, this is not even a political issue. I understand it is for a lot of people, and I understand this is a divisive issue in our country, and not everybody shares my views on it. But I believe that human life is worthy of dignity and protection, and I support laws that protect our human unborn human life. I always have, as I've done in the past. You know, the when people talk about a federal abortion ban, mm-hmm. what they're talking about is the 15-week ban, which Lindsey Graham sponsored and I have co-sponsored in the past. That law is less restrictive or identical to virtually every country in Europe except for two. Mm-hmm. Now, the extremists here are the Democrats. Not once, but twice, they have voted in Congress to support a law that basically has no meaningful restrictions. They claim it does, but it has no meaningful restrictions. And I think if we are indeed in this republic, which is what we live in a divisive issue like this, where everybody's views have to be taken into account, it's very difficult to find, if there is such a thing, an arrangement at the federal level with people who basically will not vote for any meaningful restrictions on abortion.
Well, of course, the restrictions would be after 21 weeks. But let me ask it to you this way. Donald Trump
says... No, that's not accurate. I'm sorry, that's not what that bill did. No, I'm sorry, but that's not what that bill did. That bill, it didn't say anything about doctors. It said practitioners. So it didn't have to be a doctor that makes this decision. It didn't say anything about a reasonable harm. It's just a good faith. Yeah. And so basically, even if it's remote and unlikely, you could still say, and it's not even about, by the way, in the law that they had, it's not even about the life of the mother, it's about the health. So it could be a nurse practitioner or a nurse, healthcare practitioner, someone needs to define that, and it can be for virtually any reason. So I understand what they claim the bill did, but in practice, that bill had no meaningful restrictions. It was, in essence, a vote not once, but twice, from Democrats to have abortion at any time for any reason.
Let me just note, though, that less than 1% of abortions take place after 21 weeks. Let me just ask you, though, this
Then
week,
everybody should be in favor of just ban. If they're so rare, then let's just ban them all after 21 weeks. Why are they fighting so hard on that?
Well, because usually if they happen, it's because there is a crisis with the health of the mother. Let me ask you, though, Donald Trump says
no, but if there's a crisis with the life of the mother, a real crisis, that every bill has that restriction in place. Every bill has that exception.
Senator, let me ask it this way. Donald Trump says, quote, he's not signing a national abortion ban. Do you disagree with him on that point?
Well, he won't get to sign one because there's no way we can pass it. I've never claimed we have 60 votes in the Senate and votes in the House and everything else that goes in between.
That was Marco Rubio with Kristen Welker today. And again, if I was advising Donald Trump, I want a vice president that knows how to deal with reporters, especially aggressive reporters who are Sally One Notes or Krista One Notes on the issue of abortion. You've got to know how to handle the national media. Most political candidates, be they left or right, they accept the premise of any question that someone like Kristen Welker asks. Rubio does not do it, didn't do it today. And so as a political commodity, I'd feel a lot more comfortable with Marco Rubio as my vice president than I would with Governor Burgum, and I have nothing against Governor Burgum. I just don't think he has he doesn't have an example of how he can be a pit bull with the news media. And so I think that he, you know, Eric, I don't know where you stand on Marco Rubio, but as a political animal, do you agree or do you not agree that the ability to handle the news media and basically kick the crap out of them if they're picking on you is a big plus that Donald Trump might really like?
So I think there's two things we need to split here. I think Marco Rubio is probably a pretty good advocate for the Trump candidacy, for the Trump campaign. To get to the vice presidential question, you've got to answer a really important one. Between Trump and Rubio, which one's moving out of Florida? Because they can't both be from the same state.
Trump. By the way, one of the things that Michael Cohen said this past week when he was under testimony, he said that Donald Trump's residency is New York. I didn't see a big report on that, but it would be easy for Donald Trump to vote from New York as well as Florida. But again, there's a lot of Floridians that are on that that list of Donald Trump's. I'm just saying is that I think
it'd be
Rubio
much more in Donald Trump's. I think it'd be much more in Donald Trump's character to make Marco Rubio resign the Senate and move to Wisconsin and claim that he was always really a Wisconsinite at heart or something like that. That would be to me much more in line with the kind of way that Donald Trump rolls. But I mean, it's possible that Trump could reestablish his residency officially in New York, but I just. It doesn't seem like the kind of thing that he would want to do. He wouldn't want to be the one to have to make a change to accommodate someone else.
He keeps telling everybody how much he loves New York. He wants to have a rally at Madison Square Garden. I mean, he drew 100,000 people in New Jersey just across the river a couple of weeks ago. I mean,
he can love New York as much as he wants and still not actually reestablish his residence.
Obviously. Anybody else to comment on Marco Rubio?
Oh, right. Definitely. I feel like I was listening to a different segment than you were, Bruce. Look, at the very end when he said, you know, when she said Donald Trump said he wouldn't sign a national abortion ban, how do you respond to that? And he basically said, well, he wouldn't get to because we don't have enough votes. That's not an answer. That's him being combative with the reporter initially.
Isn't that a fact? That's what Nikki Haley said.
Well, you can't
get 60 votes.
But that's not the question he was asked. He dodged the question. Look, Marco Rubio has a long history of being all over the place. He's a quintessential Republican politician. One area where I agree very strongly with Donald Trump is not to sign a national abortion ban of any form. The Supreme Court finally just did what it was meant to do. Send it to the states. It should stay there.
Okay. I got two guests that don't like Marco Rubio.
All right. So let me respond. I think Marco Rubio would be a good selection for Trump. Yeah. because he is very quick on his feet. And sometimes this idea that he's all over the board, sometimes he's not. Sometimes it's the way you corner him. But look, let me tell you, he's very combative with the reporters, and he's very effective. She clearly was not prepared. She hadn't read the bill, and he made mincemeat out of her. In terms of his, I agree with you, in terms of his question about Trump's position on the kind of a national abortion ban, you're right, he punted, but it was a good punt. It was a good, that was a long punt. He got that in the 20-yard line corner because there was no way he was going to say he was going to criticize Trump. So, look, when you look at, really quickly, when you look at some of the other characters who have been showing up at his trial, there's a couple of them that would scare the hell out of me. So at the end of the day, I think Marco would be a good pick.
My point is, it's easy to stand up, be in the background, and have your picture taken with Trump, and maybe they ask you to come forward and say a few words, like J.D. Vance or Doug Burgum. That's an easy thing for him to do. It's a lot more difficult for Marco Rubio to sit down for 20 minutes or 15 minutes with Christian Welker and go one-on-one with her.
Well, here's the punchline to all this in my mind. And I get asked all the time, who does Trump pick? Who should he pick for his running mate? I might be naive. I don't think it makes any difference who he picks. Nobody is going to vote for Donald Trump because of who his vice president is. I'll put an asterisk by it.
Go ahead. Make your finish your point.
The one that could be very interesting, and he won't pick her, would be Tulsi Gabbard. Mm-hmm. That would be interesting.
It would be interesting, but I don't think it would go very far. One last, and then we're going to move on to a different topic, I promise. We're going to talk about world affairs. The question is, in all these recent primaries, long since Donald Trump has been the go-to guy who's going to be the candidate, 20% of Republican primary voters vote for someone again, or they vote for Nikki Haley. They vote against Donald Trump. That's 20%. Those 20% of Republicans he is going to need. So my question to you is, what about Nikki Haley? Would Nikki Haley be able to bring back some of those 20% to the candidate of Donald Trump candidacy in the fall? Yes or no? Does he do it?
No, she'd be a terrible choice.
Anybody think she'd be a good choice? I guess.
There's a theory in which she'd be a good choice.
There's
but
your silence.
No, it wouldn't happen.
Okay. We're going to pause. 1-800-723-8020. And when we come back, I promise we're going to solve all the problems of the world.
Video series Fault Lines, Professor Voddy Baucham examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide. Available at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
I love this song! I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in 1,000 pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving.
A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate.
I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back, and one of the questions that I want to talk about as we talk about foreign affairs this evening is the recent decision by the Biden administration to withhold weapons and support to Israel. President Biden does not like the way that Bibi Netanyahu is waging his war against Hamas, and he's holding back some of those weapons. And my question to you, Eric, we'll let you begin the discussion. How devastating is this to the reputation of the United States on the world stage, or is it a good message to send to our ally?
No, I don't think it's very good. I think it's pretty damaging to the United States. This is fairly similar to the behavior, the withholding of something appropriated by Congress, to what Donald Trump was impeached for in the first impeachment trial. So I think there are some open questions about that. They don't seem to be, in all likelihood, the votes, given the narrow House margin, to actually move forward on an impeachment. But the ground seemed to be pretty similar to what was brought against Trump in early on in the Trump administration with his dealings with Ukraine. No, I think this is the kind of thing that is going to take a lot of people who are disgusted by Donald Trump and consider themselves to be on the center right, who are going to now look at what Biden is doing and the way that he is acting vis-a-vis Israel, and they're potentially going to be driven back over to Donald Trump, or in some cases are considering the possibility of voting for him, which they had not considered before. So I don't think this is a good political move. I don't think it's a good foreign policy move. I think it's a huge mistake by the Biden administration, who is listening way too much to people who are tuned in to what's happening on college campuses and not to the people that are actually on the ground in swing states that Biden is going to need to win.
Paul Vels.
I agree with you 100%. I think he's listening to the far left, the screamers. And I don't think it's going to go far enough for him to solidify his support on the far left. You know, I mean, they're going to see that. They're going to see that. They're adjusting.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Keep talking.
They're going to see that as basically not enough. So they're going to need on the far left. It's not going to be enough for them. It's not going to satisfy them. It's not going to help. It's not going to help them. You know, I also think it sends an absolute terrible a signal in the Middle East. People have to realize that Israel is not the target in the Middle East. It's us. And it's Iran who is basically subsidizing all their surrogates. And at the end of the day, you know, the only thing preventing the Middle East from being dominated by Iran is the United States. So, you know, so if Israel disappeared tomorrow, they would turn their attention to undermining, and they're already obviously spending a lot of time undermining some of the conservative regimes there. And at the end, so believe me, that's why the Jordanians helped the Israelis shoot down those Russian missiles, and why Egypt has not responded in any aggressive way to what they're doing along the Suez, so to speak.
A question to you, Brent. Can Israel win this war without further support from the United States? And if so, what would it mean?
Well, first of all, I wish I were qualified to answer the question,
it's an opinion.
Because I don't, I don't have enough knowledge of Israel's military capability, but here's what I do have knowledge of. What we're doing, I make the argument in Dissidently Speaking that the United States is the most failed nation of consequence in foreign policy since the end of the Second World War in all of human history. No nation that mattered this much has failed this badly. We should have learned something from Napoleon a long time ago at a simple phrase. If you start to take Vienna, take Vienna. If we were going to get involved and make a decision to help Israel wipe out this threat, resecure its nation, and reframe borders, then we should have been in. We can't get in, get out, move around a little bit. Oh, we'll send you something. Oh, not those kinds of bombs. We look like fools. And to be our ally has been a risky endeavor for the last, well, since 1945. It just keeps getting riskier. This isn't about whether Israel survives without us or not. This is about the United States continuing to matter and ultimately
Is it more devastating with Ukraine? I mean, haven't we treated Ukraine basically the same way?
I see the Ukraine situation as an apple to Israel's orange. I am of the mind that we did do everything we could to cause this invasion. This is our fault. We were fools to be considering Ukraine to be in NATO. Fools. And for Russia to step in and do what they did, we literally sort of drove them to it. And for those who think that if we don't stop them in Ukraine, they're going to go into Poland, I have two words. Stop it. Russia is not going to invade Eastern Europe because of Ukraine. But what we have done by our position in Ukraine is we have driven Russia into the arms of the Chinese. China is our enemy. Russia can't hurt us. Russia plus China is checkmate. And we did that. We are fools and we are reckless. And this is a failed foreign policy everywhere you look, not for the last year, since 1945. Eric, feel strongly about it.
Eric, your response.
There's a lot there. I reject the conclusion that it is our fault that Russia decided to go into Ukraine. It is Russia's fault for deciding to go into Ukraine. They have agency. They made the decision to go ahead and do it. Whether it's Poland next, if you're going to throw Poland out as the example, I don't think they're going into Poland next. But, you know, the escalation of what we heard from when they there were operations in Georgia and then in Crimea and now the full scale invasion of Ukraine was like, oh, they're not going to take that next step. They're not going to take that next step. They're not going to take that next step. And you know what? They kept taking that next step. So, you know, it maybe not Poland, maybe the Balkan states, but I see little reason looking at the history of the last several years to think that it is beyond Putin's capability or desire to want to continue to take more territory. So there's some interesting, perhaps something interesting in the analysis I just heard there, but the conclusions of it I reject most of, most specifically the idea that the United States is the one at fault for the decision of the Russians to invade Ukraine. That's Russia's decision, not the United States.
Yeah, just very quickly, now that I've adjusted my microphone, I agree with you in that, let's face it, we made promises that we broke, particularly that the Eastern European countries that were part of the Soviet bloc would not become part of NATO. And of course, you know, even flirting with the possibility of the Ukraine joining NATO, I mean, that was a line that we should not have crossed, although the administration has not signed on to Ukraine coming in. But to think that Russia is not a danger, even the even Sweden has joined NATO, and Sweden was neutral in World War II. So at the end of the day, I mean, Putin has invaded, what, five countries? And is he going to invade Poland? I think if he's learned his lesson from the Ukraine, is that as an invading army, the Russians are not as effective as they are when it comes to defending the homeland. Right. At the end of that, I don't know if he'd even want to mess with the Poles, but the Balkan countries putting pressure on Eastern European countries. I mean, he represents a clear and present danger. But this is another example, like with Israel. They're in now. We are in now. This long delay in not giving them the ammo that they needed to defend themselves. It's another example like Afghanistan. Like, and I had a son who was in Afghanistan, a combat veteran in Afghanistan. It's just another example of us, you know, of our whole failed approach of us being an unreliable partner, right, of us intervening and then not going to land. And I'm not suggesting that we needed to stay in Afghanistan forever, but let's face it, the total mismanagement of the exodus of Afghanistan was an embarrassment, was a national humiliation.
Do you all expect now that based on, you know, the reaction worldwide to U.S. policy, do you expect Bibi Netanyahu now to say, you know what, we're going to do it alone? He has said we're going to do it alone. So what happens if he goes into Rajah and wins? What do we say to that? Do we say stop? The demonstrations on the campuses are going to continue. At the conventions, they're going to be massive. But my question is, do we as a nation, is that what we suffer because Bibi Netanyahu says, you know what, forget the United States, we're going to do this. We can't depend on them anymore. And is that good for Israel?
Well, I'll give you the answer with a completely different example. Last year, the president of Brazil was being asked about the whole BRICS currency thing and leaving the U.S. dollar as the international trading thing. And he said, you know, they're not tied to the gold standard or anything anymore. Who says we have to be tied to the United States? Good question. So from Israel's perspective, if they are able to accomplish their objectives, absent our help as requested, as promised, as desired, perhaps when they're done, they might say, who says we have to be the United States ally? That would be a rational question to ask. No idea how they'd answer it, but a rational
question. Would they say that in the wake of military success in Rajah? Would they still say, Rafah, rather? Would they say, you know what, we did this, the United States, but you think then they would look to, for further punishment of the United States? Or would they just say, hey, folks, we did it without you?
Well, again, impossible to say what they would say. What I do know it would do is give them, again, that opportunity to take a very rational look at their relationship with us and say, gosh, did it really turn out the way we thought that it would and counted on it? And that would be an interesting question for them to ask, and it would be interesting to see where they turn next.
You know, people have some commentators have said that Hamas's attack on Israel was their 9/11. Hamas's attack on Israel was their Dunkirk. I mean, if they've learned anything over the last 4 or 5 months, is that anti-Semitism is alive and well, and they're going to have to go it alone if they need be. And I believe that they'll be prepared to go it alone.
When we come back, we will have one more segment to go, and we'll pick up with Paul's comments back shortly.
Matthew.
Huh? Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey. Want a drink?
No, thanks. I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect, so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Bruce DeMont back. We continue with Beyond the Beltway. Eric Cohn, to you, much has been said and written about the opposition that has arisen to Joe Biden by the pro-Palestinian community in Michigan because of your recent primary and also to some extent in the state of Minnesota. From your perspective in Michigan, is the national media overplaying that as an issue, or is the interpretation of the power of the Palestinian vote overstated?
I think it is being overplayed, and I think it is pretty significantly overstated. I think the number of people, when you look at national polling, if you look at state polling, that is generally reflective of that national polling as well, where people come down as you ask these questions. Yes, there are a lot of young people as the only demographic where support of Israel versus the Palestinians is more in favor of the Palestinian people. But those are also the most unreliable people when it comes to showing up at the polls in November. It is still pretty overwhelming support for Israel and all of the other age demographics. And the number of people who are going to be alienated from Joe Biden by his actions, the kinds that he has currently taken and may go in the other direction or may stay home, are more likely to cost him the election and cost him Michigan than he is likely to gain from having catered to a small percentage of the population that is nonetheless very vocal and whose cause is being well supported and well represented on elite college campuses throughout the country and then certainly within the West Wing of the White House as well.
Paul Vallis, you said before the break you referenced anti-Semitism. Given the tone of many of the protests on college campuses, some of which have turned into anti-Semitic protests, not all, but some, what do we do as a nation to address that issue? I think we all acknowledge that it's there. How do we address it? What do we say?
Well, look, I think, first of all, we send a message by supporting Israel. And not equivocating, and I agree with one of the things you said earlier. If you really want to have an influence on Israel, don't threaten to cut them off, because they view this as their Dunkirk. They feel that they are surrounded. They feel that Iran is in effect, using these surrogates to eliminate Israel. And we need to realize that the only thing that allows us to continue to really be a force within the Middle East is the presence of Israel. So at the end of the day, I think.
But if we continue to support Israel, and I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't, but what does that do to this perception? Maybe it's a reality, maybe it's perception that anti-Semitism is growing.
Well,
would it grow less if we pulled the plug out from Israel? I don't think so, but what's your thought?
Well, first of all, Israel is going to continue to do what's in their national interests, And it is an issue of survival. And if anything, the last, you know, the events since October, including the reaction internationally, has only reinforced that. So it's not going to matter what we do. They're going to do what needs to be done, and we're going to continue to support them enough so that we're going to have the far, far left, which clearly seems to have too much influence in the Biden administration currently, they're going to continue not to be satisfied with things. But let me also point out that the media is also playing up what's happening on the university campuses. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Well, look, they're like desperate to spread this narrative that the cops are being abusive, which they're not. I mean, the way the police have responded on the campuses has been with great restraint and great, you know, and they've been extremely careful. But, you know, it was interesting. There was this, maybe it was in Austin, where they had this massive graduation, thousands there in one of the stadiums, and the media focused their attention on these 20 Palestinian pro-Palestinian protesters, and they talked about how they were disrupting the graduation when it was just a group hollering and everybody else was kind of ignoring them and going out with their graduation time. So I think the media is deliberately feeding this narrative that somehow the college campuses are erupting, and of course there's desperation on the far left, and you see it here in Chicago with a number of the aldermen referring to police abuse or police state or Gestapo tactics on these university campuses, when all the police are doing is dismantling tents,
right,
and removing the debris and the garbage. So at the end of the day, I think it's overstated.
Brett, any thought?
Yeah, it's not exactly Kent State.
Yes.
Right.
And we lived during Kent. We remember those years. And the
coverage of it, I mean, it brings you back to William Randolph Hearst, and you give me pictures, I'll give you a war. But you asked the question, what does the United States do sort of about this anti-Semitism thing? Well, I think we've done pretty well. I mean, overall, this is not a country filled with the persecution and open vitriolic hatred of Jewish people. We've done pretty well. But anti-Semitism has been around. You know, you can trace different roots. I'd say that Gospel of Matthew had a pretty good thing to do with it. Constantine's move to make Rome a Christian empire had a lot to do with it, and it's been going strong ever since. It, like the poor, will always be with us. So the question is, how do we deal with it when it surfaces aggressively? What will we do to quell it, and how do we control and manage it?
What's
we
the
can't
answer?
Eliminate it. Well, that's a great question. The answer is case by case, specifically in moments, in sectors, what do you do? Right now in the United States, what do we do? We don't give in to the anti-Semitism. We don't give in to what we're seeing on campus. If we give in to it, then we'll nurture and foster it. And humans love conflict, and they love to fight, and they love to hate. So we can't allow it to happen without consequence.
On that note, we're out of time, Eric. Sorry we don't get a chance for your final comment on it because we have run out of time. But Eric Cohen has joined us from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Brent Imichek from Human Events Magazine has also joined us. And Paul Vallis, educator and candidate for mayor of the city of Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks very much for joining us for this wild-ranging conversation of politics in America and around the world this evening. Our thanks to Fritz Coleman. He helped make this program possible. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont from Chicago. Good night, everybody.